Thank you for your indulgence. Okay. Zero 4 1865, Imran S. Hussein versus John Ashcroft.
Members of the panel, good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the court. My name is Christopher Held, and I represent the petitioner in this case. This matter comes before you by way of a petition for review, challenging the decision of the Board of Immigration Appeals' decision to deny and affirm the immigration judge's decision in the denial of the petitioner's request for political asylum, withholding of removal, and protection under the Convention Against Torture. A removal order, a deportation order, was entered against the respondent on December 16, 2002. The BIA dismissed the appeal on March 11, 2004, in an AWO, or affirmance without opinion, which the court is well aware is an unarticulated one- or two-sentence decision, simply affirming the decision of the immigration judge. That was made on March 11, 2004. On April 6th, this petition was filed. On April 9th, a motion for reconsideration based on new facts and new evidence was submitted to the Board of Immigration Appeals while this petition was pending. On July 30th, 2004, the BIA then also denied that motion for reconsideration. On August 12th, 2004, the petitioner filed a petition for review based on that decision of the BIA, and then both cases were both consolidated before this court. The issue here is whether the immigration judge and the BIA violated the petitioner's due process rights because they failed to take into consideration evidence supporting his asylum claim. And secondly, whether the immigration judge and then also the Board of Immigration Appeals in their decision to deny the motion to reconsider violated the petitioner's due process rights because they gave excessive weight to a credibility finding that was not supported in the evidence.
Has Mr. Hussein ever obtained documentation that would corroborate his hospital stay for the gunshot wounds, or that would corroborate his membership in TJP?
No to the first question and yes to the latter. He does have information, letters from his organization, letters from family members, which evidence that he was a member of the TJP. We believe that he did supply a credible or reasonable explanation as to why he did not have information concerning the court's first question.
How would you explain why it wasn't possible to obtain the documents allotted within the time allotted, I should say, by immigration judge Duryigian?
Why the petitioner could not respond or provide?
Yeah, within the time allotted. The hospital records, I really understand, but the corroboration in TJP.
The corroboration issue was dealt directly on record. The petitioner's attorney requested leave prior to the cutoff date, which was the local operating procedure. I believe it's a 10-day rule. This immigration judge had a 60-day rule. The request for leave to file these documents were filed prior to...
No, I understand, but how does he explain it?
He provides an explanation stating that he basically explains what happened. He's not questioned as to why he doesn't have the documents. He's simply asked, does he have the documents? He provides an explanation. It's either a yes or no question. He answers no. Then the government doesn't impeach him. His credibility is in question on that issue simply because he doesn't provide that documentation. The immigration judge denies his credibility based on the fact that he doesn't provide any documents, at least documentation which would support his testimony. He doesn't say that his testimony is somehow contradictory with documents that were provided. The immigration judge simply states that he set a discovery cutoff, you didn't file it, and now he's going to deny the case based on the fact that he didn't file any documents. He doesn't deny it on the basis of an adverse credibility finding, which is supported in the record. He states that there's mere conflicts between Sunni and Shi'i Muslims, which, you know, we would submit that you would only have to look to Pakistan's neighbor to the north, and you see that there are huge conflicts between Shi'i and Sunni Muslims, specifically in Iraq, where people are dying every day. And we wouldn't request that this immigration judge take notice of that fact, but the fact that the country report does state that there are conflicts between Shi'i and Sunni Muslims, it's not necessarily simply a Hatfield and McCoy type of situation, or you know, maybe that's a bad analogy, but it's a severe conflict where people are dying, and this petitioner feared for his life. And it was the explanation that he gave at trial were credible. They were not internally inconsistent. And if you look at the record as to why the judge calls into question his testimony, he states that there was an elevation of his voice. I wouldn't believe that would be a basis for a denial or saying that the person's incredible because he raised his voice when asked certain questions.
I just want to get back to this documentation for a minute to make sure it's clear in my mind. This documentation, the statements of the witnesses relating to his membership and that kind of thing, were those the documents that the IJ denied as untimely?
Based on my discussions with the client,
exact documents that were submitted to the court?
No, there were two documents which are an issue. There are the first set of documents which the respondent contends should have been accepted, and then there are a second set of documents which were filed on a timely filed motion to reconsider, which we argue that the BIA should have considered. We don't argue that the immigration judge obviously should have considered them because they were not available at the time. So there's two issues with regard to documents. The first, responding specifically to the court's inquiry, the answer is no, the record is devoid of any of the documents. My answer is based on my own discussions with the client, which were never filed with the court because the court barred them. But in answer to the court's question, they were documentation not pertaining to medical or hospital records, but they were documents which we could file now, which would be pertaining to membership in the TJP, the organization which the respondent testified during the trial that he was a member, and because of that membership suffered severe persecution, was beaten, was threatened with an electrical drill.
Well, thank
shot.
You. I just wanted that point
yes.
clarified. I just wanted to make sure that was clear.
The third issue, I believe, which the government may argue this morning, centers around a fax I received on Friday, and I reviewed it this morning. I have no objection to discussing that issue if the court feels it's a pertinent issue. I believe it's an issue regarding whether the respondent or the petitioner would qualify as some type of persecutor or be a member of a group which would engage in the persecution or terrorist activities of others. The record is completely devoid of any evidence whatsoever by either the respondent or the government or any of the documentation submitted in this case which would lend to that type of conclusion. Yet it appears that the immigration judge may have denied the asylum case based on some type of suspicion, if any, that he was a member of some type of group that would persecute others.
I thought there was some evidence in the record of a State Department report that identified this group as an extremist group and thereby making the alleged persecution here just a conflict between rival extremist groups.
The basis of this asylum claim was based on the petitioner being a Shi'i Punjabi Muslim, which basically is a minority within a minority. The State Department does not categorize that particular membership, the basis of this petitioner's claim, as a membership in that group or a terrorist organization. The State Department has specific lists of names of groups that are considered terrorist groups. The respondent is not considered any within any of those lists. I think it's somewhat of a red herring even to suggest that, but notwithstanding, I'm willing to argue that on rebuttal if that issue becomes apparent this morning.
Well, it is apparent for me. The
yes.
evidence I thought was that this TJP group was identified by the State Department as an extremist group, whether it's terrorist or not, we can put to the side. It's identified as an extremist group. His whole claim is based upon membership in that group and alleged persecution from another extremist group.
Assuming, arguendo, that this petitioner was a member of, quote-unquote, an extremist group, the definition of an extremist group does not qualify as a terrorist group. It doesn't qualify under Attorney General Ashcroft's decision as to what would qualify as a persecutor. You have to be specifically identified by name on the list, or you have to be found to engage in harming of others. That was never the issue in this case, ever.
Maybe I'm not being clear. If this is, apart from whether this group persecuted others, the group that your client belonged to,
yes,
or whether he did, if all this is, you know, warfare between rival extremist groups, then how does that legally qualify as an asylum claim? Otherwise, every member of any of those groups would have an asylum claim.
Well, he feels that he's a member of a particular group, a religious organization or a social group, a defined group which exists and operates in his home country, which the government is unable to protect him, or there are the groups which are persecuting him. And I think the evidence was clear that he did encompass that group. Now, whether that group is an extremist group, I think, is assuming arguendo it is, it still wouldn't qualify as a persecutor. He would still be eligible for asylum. He never testified that he harmed other people. In fact, it was the exact opposite. He testified at length that he was harmed, that his life was threatened, he was shot. There's no question as to whether he was harmed in this case. We feel that it was a well-founded fear of persecution, that the immigration judge's bases for denying this on a credibility issue was not specific and cogent. In fact, he used his own discovery cutoff rule to bar him from any discussion of what documentation he could have brought in. I think that the immigration judge, if you were going to question his credibility, would go into other types of issues, the kinds that have been recently promulgated by this court, which everyone is well aware of, and those specific and cogent reasons were not identified by the immigration judge.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hilge. Ms. Drunker.
Your Honors, may it please the Court, my name is Allison Drucker. I'm representing the United States. The Court reviews here under the substantial evidence standard and must affirm unless the record compels a contrary result. The immigration judge denied asylum and withholding on three alternative bases, any one of which would itself be sufficient: adverse credibility, failure to carry the burden of proof, and being a persecutor. I would like to start by addressing the issue of the adverse credibility and how it relates to the lack of corroboration and the due process issue which my opposing counsel has raised. Of course, the immigration judge's credibility determination merits highly differential review under the precedent of this court. The immigration judge disbelieved petitioner after observing his demeanor and hearing his testimony. In such a situation, the lack of corroboration can be fatal. Here, the petitioner did not submit documents about his membership in the TJP, the incidents that he described in his asylum application and his testimony. He did not submit hospital records or police records regarding the gunshot wounds he allegedly received. There were no affidavits from his parents, although he said he called them on the telephone weekly. That's at AR 243. There were no affidavits from his stepbrother in Canada. That's at AR 267-68. And no affidavits from his friend in Lahore, Pakistan, who put up a $6,000 bond for him, but according to petitioner, was too busy to write a letter on his behalf. That's administrative record 257-259. He also did not submit anything in the record from a doctor here in the United States about the scars that he showed in the immigration court to show that these actually were gunshot wounds. Now, petitioner claims that the immigration judge's denial of a continuance prevented him from presenting such evidence and therefore violated his due process rights.
Ms. Drucker, forgive me for 1 minute. I'm going to stop you. Can we fix that? I'm afraid it's going to interfere with the recording.
Sorry.
It's not you.
Maybe when I moved. I hope you'll still be able to hear me.
No, yeah, that'll be fine. That's our resident engineer.
Thank you. This due process violation claim fails for two independent reasons. The first one is the, I'm not sure how to pronounce this, Kersiku case that the petitioner relies on. Is not applicable here because, in fact, the petitioner had plenty of time to obtain and submit documentation. He was in the United States in August of 2001. He prepared an asylum application in January 2002. He was told by the immigration judge in June of 2002 that his documents were due in October of 2002, so he had another 4 months on top of that. He didn't seek a continuance until after that time period had already expired. That time period expired on October 16, and he didn't even file his continuance until October 18. So it's not too surprising that the immigration judge denied it. Now, in addition to the fact that he had all this time to get these materials, petitioner has not shown prejudice, which is required under the precedent of the court. And the facts underlying this failure to show prejudice also, I believe, relate to the adverse credibility finding, and this is why. If you look at page 309 of the administrative record, that is his motion for the continuance that was filed on October 18th of 2002. And it says, I quote, "The relatives in Pakistan have already forwarded some materials from Pakistan, and they are en route to the United States." That's very interesting because these documents never show up. Nobody in the administrative proceedings or this court has ever seen these documents from Pakistan.
Well, he was denied use of them.
Yeah, but, Your Honor, on November 8, 2002, petitioner attempted to offer documents to the immigration court. Even though his motion for the continuance had been denied, he did offer documents. But these documents were not documents from Pakistan. They were general background documents. This is at Administrative Record 287. Again, later, when he filed his motion to reopen, he submitted documents. But they weren't documents from Pakistan. They were an opinion of a U.S. expert. This is at Administrative Record 69 to 74. So it's hard to see what the story was with these documents that were supposedly in the mail from Pakistan. Now, continuing to discuss the adverse credibility factors, as I said before, there's also the question of demeanor, which, according to this court's precedent, is entitled to deference. The immigration judge found the petitioner extremely nervous. His voice dropped frequently. His story appeared fabricated and rehearsed.
You know, I'm going to say something, Ms. Drucker, and forgive me. Who wouldn't be nervous? I mean, who wouldn't be here?
I think
these, you know, when the government comes in and says that these people are nervous, who wouldn't be nervous?
Okay.
I'm going to let you continue with your argument, but
I appreciate your remark, Judge Rovner. But as I say, that was one of four factors that the immigration judge mentioned, and I think you have to understand that the immigration judge had heard testimony that he was presumably relating to the demeanor. This particular petitioner was a trained public speaker. That's in the record at 178. In fact, he said that he was famous as a public speaker. That was a record 215, and very active and had a lot of experience as a public speaker. That's in the record at 219. So that was also factored in here. Additionally, there were inconsistencies and implausibilities in the testimony and the view of the immigration judge about a number of the incidents that petitioner relied on. One had to do with, a seminar was disrupted by members of the, I think it's called the SSP, and he said somebody called out, the police are coming, but the police, according to him, were coming unofficially and in civilian clothes, and the immigration judge wondered how would anybody know if that was the case, that these were the police entering. There was also testimony that petitioner walked alone 250 to 360 feet after being shot in both legs with a bullet passing through his right thigh. That's in the record at 226 to 228. Another incident in which he was on a motorcycle cornered by eight or nine people in a van armed with machine guns, close enough for him to recognize the people's faces, and yet he was able to escape from them. That's in the record at 235 to 238. And also the testimony that the TJP paid $18,000 to smugglers to bring them to the United States. That's in the record at 248. So these were all concerns that the immigration judge had about the credibility. In addition to that, there's these other reasons that I mentioned initially for the denial of relief, a failure to carry the burden of proof. As explained in Roman, which is in our 28J letter, where persecution that's feared is from a non-governmental group, the applicant has to show the government is unwilling or unable to control the feared people. There's material in the record the immigration judge cited from the country reports saying that the Pakistani government takes a serious view of sectarian violence and generally has been quick to respond to outbursts of sectarian violence. That's the record 320-21. And petitioner himself described an incident in which he was saved by the police. That's the record 213. And another one in which the police took a report after he was victimized. That's in the record at 230. So substantial evidence supports that basis as well as the adverse credibility basis. The final issue is the persecutor issue. Judge Sykes has already alluded to that. The country report in the record describes the TJP as an extremist group, and it further says that extremists killed persons because of their membership in rival sectarian organizations or simply for their religious affiliations. That's in the record 365. Petitioner himself admitted that the TJP was banned in Pakistan. That's in the record at 272. He claimed he was, as I said before, that he was famous, very active speaker, that the TJP paid all this money for him to come to the United States. Now, the case law that we submitted with that 28J letter indicates that a person does not need to personally commit atrocities to be a persecutor. And if you look at the statute, section 208 of the Immigration and Nationality Act, 8 U.S.C. 1158, there's nothing in there that says that you have to be a terrorist or on a list from the Attorney General or Secretary of State's, you know, terrorist organizations to be a persecutor. That's simply not a requirement. The burden of proof, of course, for eligibility for asylum is on the petitioner, and therefore we believe that this ground also should be supported under substantial evidence. I see my red light is on. Are there any other questions from the court?
No.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Ms. Drucker. Mr. Helt, your time was up, but I'm certainly going to give you two more minutes.
Thank you. Thank you. With regard to what the petitioner could have or should have done, that was simply answered when the immigration judge denied his request to file that. So we could argue ad nauseum as to what he could have proved, but he was not allowed to do that, so I guess we'll never know. And with the recent BIA streamlining, they specifically state that de novo review is prohibited, so he couldn't file that even if he wanted to. The BIA is strictly prohibiting any new information. They have to review strictly whatever is in the record at the time, and he's left with that. With regard to the doctor's report, the expert report, that had to also be filed within a certain time frame because the federal regulations require that you file a motion to reopen or reconsider within 30 to 90 days. So if you come up with any evidence at all, you are still barred from filing that pursuant to the board's own regulations. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Help. Mr. Help, Ms. Drucker, thank you both. Case will be taken under advisement.